رب اشرح لی صدری ویسر لی امری واحلل عقدۃ من لسانی یفقہوا قولی. دا ٹاپک فار دس ڈے از این انٹروڈکشن ٹو اسلامک فقہ. این انٹروڈکشن ٹو اسلامک فقہ. یو نو فقہ از دا تھرڈ موسٹ امپورٹنٹ ڈسپلن ان اسلام. فرسٹ از دا قرآن, سیکنڈ از دا حدیث, اینڈ تھرڈ از دا فقہ. قرآن گیوز اس دا بیسک آئیڈیالوجی آف اسلام, the basic principles of Islam. Then hadith gives us an authentic commentary of the Quran. I think that hadith is an authentic commentary of Islam. All the hadith is commentary, but not in a popular sense. You know, there are many commentaries of the Quran. There are a special pattern of these commentaries from A to Z. But this pattern is not followed in the hadith. But according to my study, all the hadith are commentary and interpretation of Islam, of Al-Quran, sometime directly and sometime indirectly. Sometime the Prophet refers to a particular verse of the Quran and then gives its meaning, its interpretation. This is direct interpretation. And sometime Prophet says something not as a commentary, but it is also a commentary in an indirect way. For example, in the Quran you read that alcohol is a sin. Innamal khamru wal maisir wal azlam rijsum min amali shaitan. So you read in the Quran that alcohol, taking alcohol is a sin for a true believer. But in Quran there are not all kind of details. You find these details in the hadith. For example, without referring to the Quran, the Prophet of Islam has said, Ma askara kaseerahu fa kaleeluhu haram. In this hadith there is no reference to any verse of the Quran, but it is interpretation of the Quran. It is commentary of the Quran. This hadith means when a large quantity of something leads to intoxication, then its small quantity is also unlawful in Islam. Quran is a complete ideology. All kind of fundamentals, all kind of principles are given in the Quran, but details are not there. Every principle requires some detail, some practical detail. So hadith means the sayings of the Prophet of Islam. So hadith is a commentary, an interpretation, a detailed description of the Quranic principles. So in Islam, there are three most important disciplines. First is the Quran, that is word of God. Then hadith, that is word of the Prophet. Then fiqh. Fiqh is inferential knowledge. Our scholars studied Quran and hadith, then they formulated some detailed principle by inference, by the way of inference. It is this discipline that is called fiqh. Now the literal meaning of fiqh is understanding. In the Quran and the hadith you find this word, but not in the present, not as a present term. In the Quran and in the hadith, fiqh is used in its literary sense. But in the Abbasid period, fiqh became a term. And in this period, fiqh became a term. That is, the knowledge of Islamic jurisprudence. So now fiqh means Islamic jurisprudence. In other words, Sharia. Fiqh and Sharia are both one and the same. Sharia is what is derived from the Quran and Hadith directly, and fiqh is inferential knowledge which was compiled by the scholars of the later period. Fiqh is very important, but fiqh is not a sacred. Quran is sacred, hadith is sacred, but fiqh is not a sacred discipline. So you have to understand this difference. Although Quran and hadith and fiqh, all these three are important discipline in Islam, but there is difference. Quran is a sacred discipline, hadith is a sacred discipline, but fiqh is not. We can reconsider of those things that was formulated by our scholars in the later period. So although fiqh is an important discipline, and without fiqh, the system of Islam cannot be completed, but you must keep in mind this point, that fiqh is not a sacred. Now, there is a question, why there are four fiqh schools? Although there were some other fiqh schools, but now Muslims believe in four schools. And if you add Shia sect, then there are five schools. Fiqh Hanafi, Fiqh Shafi, Fiqh Baliki, Fiqh Hanbali, and according to Shia people, Fiqh Jafari. So among Sunni Muslim, there are four fiqh schools. four school of fiqh. That is called Hanafi fiqh, Shafi'i fiqh, Hanbali fiqh and Maliki fiqh. So there is a question, why Islam was divided into four fiqh? Islam was a religion. Islam was based on the oneness of God. Islam was based on the prophethood of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Then why it happened that now we find four fiqh? So it is a question that why fiqh was divided into four fiqh? Why not only one? I would like to give some detail to understand this phenomena. You know, hadith literature was every time in Muslim society, but it was mostly in the memory of the people. Some hadith were written, were kept, some hadith were kept in written form, but the majority of hadith were in the memory of the people. Although all the hadith were present, but mostly in the memory. Every day they were talking about hadith. There was discussions about hadith. There was exchange on hadith. So every day hadith was in the discussions. Every day the greatest discipline was at that time hadith. So every day hadith was under discussion. It happened in the Abbasid period that hadith was compiled in the book form. Now we find hadith in the book form. There are about 24 of hadith books. Among those, 6 are called Sahih Sitta. So all these hadiths are now kept in book forms. But this was not at that time. So during the Abbasid Caliphate, Islamic scholars wanted to compile all these hadiths. And they compiled these hadiths in several books, like Sahih al-Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, and other books like Ibn Majah and Nasai and Muwatta and Musnad Ahmad. So during a Abbasid period, all the hadiths were compiled in book form. Now when these hadiths were compiled, people found that there are some kind of differences in these hadiths. All these hadiths were narrated by Sahaba. The companions of the Prophet of Islam listened directly from the Prophet. Then they narrated it to the next generation, that is Tabi. So from Prophet to companion, from companion to the companion of the companion, then to the what we call Taba Tabi'in. So this was a chain of narration. Basically all the hadith were narrated by Sahaba, companion of the Prophets. So when these hadiths were compiled in the form of several books, people found that there are some differences. What happened? Let us take the ibadah, namaz. So all the sahaba, you know, there was a hadith, sallu kama raaytumuni usalli. Perform namaz, perform salat as you see myself performing. So sahaba, that is companions, narrated that thus we saw the Prophet, thus we listened from the Prophet. So when these narrations were compiled, people found that in some part of the ibadah, all the sahaba are one and the same. For example, every sahabi tells us that there were 5-time prayers. Prophet performed 5-time prayers. In this figure, there is no difference at all. Then all the sahaba tell us that the Prophet performed Salatul Fajr with 2 units and Salatul Zuhr 4 units and Salatul Asr 4 units, Salatul Maghrib 3 units and Salatul Isha 4 units. So the number of units are one and the same. No companion tell us any different, we don't find any different statement about these numbers. So all the sahaba are telling us one and the same story. Then there were difference in something, like some sahabi tells that Prophet kept his, when Prophet started salat, when Prophet namaz, he kept his hand like this. Some say that he kept hand like this. So there is a difference. Then some sahabi tells us that when Prophet completed Al-Fatiha in the Salat, he said Ameen. So some say that he said Ameen loudly. Some say that he said Ameen by heart. So there is a difference. According to some narrators, Prophet said Ameen loudly. That is Ameen bil jahr. And according to other account, Prophet said Ameen by heart, that is Ameen bisir. So there is difference. So thus kind of difference were directed by sahaba. So then was a question, how to perform salat according to the Prophet of Islam when there is difference in the method? Then how you can say that I am following the prophetic pattern in my salat? So then there were 2 opinions. One was opinion of Muhaddis, the group of Muhaddis, and the second was the group of Fuqaha. So Muhaddisin and Fuqaha divided this question. in this issue. The opinion of Bahauddin was that all these differences pertain to minor details, not in the basics, not in the fundamentals. So they said that as far as the fundamental is concerned, as far as the fundamental parts of the Salat is concerned, there is no difference at all. But as far as the minor details are concerned, there are some differences. So they say that we cannot refute anyone of these patterns which were narrated by Sahaba. So they said that we will take it as tawasso. Tawasso means diversity. So they said that as far as the fundamentals are concerned, unity is required. But as far as the detail, minor details are concerned, here unity is not required. Here diversity is required. Diversity means both are true, both are correct. Putting hand here is correct. Putting hand here is also correct. Saying Ameen loudly is correct. Saying Ameen by heart is also correct. So they said that in minor details it is not required to be united. Unity is not required in minor details. This was the stand of the Bahauddin. But Fuqaha adopted another stand. They said, Al-Haqqo la yata'addad. Al-Haqqo la yata'addad means truth cannot be divided. So they wanted to prove that this is right, this is wrong. This is Rajah, this is Marju. It is called in the term of fiqh, Tarjih. So they wanted to make Tarjih. Tarjih means saying that this is superior and this is inferior. So one style is inferior, another style is superior, there is afzal. So thus they wanted to find unity in the minor details also. So as all these differences were there, it was possible for them to eradicate all those differences. It was not possible to say that all these differences are wrong. Because all those differences were narrated by the companions of the Prophet. So what happened? Seeking unity becomes a counterproductive. And due to this kind, here in details it was not possible to unite all those differences. So they divided into four parts. In seeking unity resulted into disunity. So we are inherited this history. You know, one of those four Fuqaha was Al-Imam Shafi. He was great scholar of Islam. So he said, after studying all these details, he said that it will be difficult to find unity because differences are established. So he said that although he opted some priority, he also adopted the principle of priority. But he said he was an honest scholar. He was very honest scholar. So he said that رأي صواب يحتمل الخطأ ورأي غير خطأ يحتمل الصواب. It means that my opinion is right with the possibility that it may be wrong. My opinion is right with the possibility that it may be wrong, because both were narrated by the companions. So Shafi was not in a position to say that this narrator is wrong and this narrator is right. He was in a position. Both were companion. How you can say that companion one is right and companion two is wrong? You cannot say like this, because the Prophet of Islam has said Ashabi kan nujum bi-ayyihim iqtadaytum ihtadaytum. This is a saying of the Prophet of Islam. Ashabi kan nujum bi-ayyihim iqtadaytum ihtadaytum. My companions are like stars. My companions are like stars. You can follow any one of these stars. My companions are like different stars. And you can follow any one of these stars. So here the Prophet gave endorsement of all the narrators, all the narrations of Sahaba. Here the Prophet of Islam has given an endorsement, a confirmation to all the narrators. So how you can reject any one of them? This was a difficulty. This was a difficult problem. So Imam Shafi'i wanted to solve this problem by this saying, رأي صواب يحتمل الخطأ ورأي غير خطأ يحتمل الصواب. My opinion is right with the possibility that it may be wrong. So it is a dilemma. I don't think that is it was a right stand, but they adopted this stand. The right stand was taken by Muhaddiseen, and that was, their stand was derived by the hadith itself, because in this hadith Ashabi kun nujum biayyihim iqtadaytum ihtadaytum. So Prophet said, Prophet says, بِأَيِّهِمْ اِقْتَدَيْتُمْ اِهْتَدَيْتُمْ. It means that all the companions are right narrators. All the companions are every companions, you have to follow every companions. So if there was difference, you can say that Prophet himself says, Prophet himself said that this is a matter of diversity. It is not a matter of unification. Don't try to unify, but take it as a diversity. So here I would like to add one more point, that ibadat is not simply a form. Ibadat is not simply a set of rituals. No. Ibadat is a living practice. Just like love. Love is a living practice. You cannot say that you have to love by this method. There is no method of love. Because love is a living spirit. So ibadat is a living practice. Anything that is living practice cannot be unified. For example, there is a hadith that once the Prophet of Islam was leading a congregational prayer. Once the Prophet of Islam was leading a congregational prayer in the mosque of Medina. So you know, the prescribed way is that when we stand from the ruku, we say, Rabbana lakal hamd. So one companion who was offering the namaz. So other companion said, Rabbana lakal hamd by heart. One companion said loudly, Rabbana lakal hamd, hamdan kaseeran tayyiban mubarakan fi. Prophet was there, and all other companions said by heart, Rabbana lakal hamd. One companion said loudly, Rabbana lakal hamd, hamdan kaseeran tayyiban mubarakan fi. So there was a suspense. There was a suspense. So when he completed the salat, Prophet asked, who said like this? So that companion fell in fear. He was of the opinion that I committed a wrong, perhaps. But Prophet said, no, it was not wrong. You were right. And God accepted your words. This event shows us the true picture of the Islamic ibadah. That ibadah is not simply to complete some rituals. Ibadah is not simply to perform some rituals. No, ibadah is not a form, it is not a set of rituals, but it is a spirited practice. So when you are full of spirit, you cannot take a routine. It is impossible. When there is no, only spiritless actions can be performed in routine. So namaz is not a routine. Salat is not a spiritless routine. A routine without spirit is not namaz. Namaz is a spiritful action. And when your heart is fully with spirit, you sometime do against the routine. Sometimes we will go against the routine. So this was the spirit of that namaz, that companion. It was the spirit of that companion which went after the routine. And by his enthusiasm, by his thrill, at that time he was in thrill. So on that thrilling experience, he said, Rabbana lakal hamd, hamdan kaseeran tayyiban mubarakan fi. So this kind of namaz cannot be taken as a routine. نماز اور صلات اور عبادہ از اے پریکٹس دیٹ از فل آف اسپرٹ از ناٹ سمپلی اے روٹین. سو اٹ از بٹ نیچرل دیٹ دیر آر سم ڈفرنسز ان ڈیٹیلس. اٹ از بٹ نیچرل وین نماز از ناٹ اے روٹین دین اٹ از بٹ نیچرل دیٹ دیر مسٹ بی سم ڈفرنسز ایٹ لیسٹ ان دا ڈیٹیلس. سو آئی وڈ لائک ٹو سے دیٹ آل دو ان دا فنڈامنٹل پارٹس آف عبادہ دیر از اے یونیٹی یونیفارمیٹی دیر از اے یونیفارمیٹی بٹ ایز فار ایز دا ڈیٹیلس آر کنسرن تو دیر از نو یونیفارمیٹی. اسپرٹ کین ناٹ افورڈ یونیفارمیٹی. یونیفارمیٹی از اے فنامنا دیٹ از پارٹ آف یور روٹین. اونلی ان روٹین یو کین فائنڈ یونیفارمیٹی. اونلی روٹین اونلی ان ریچولس یو کین فائنڈ یونیفارمیٹی. بٹ ان اسپرٹڈ ایکشن یو کین ناٹ فائنڈ روٹین. Spirited action does not accept routine. Spirited action is like a storm. How you can bind a storm in a routine? So I think that the group of Bodhisattvas was right and group of Fuqaha were wrong. Group of Bodhisattvas said that ایہم اختدیتم اہتدیتم. گروپ آف مدثرین سیڈ دیٹ آل دا صحابہ آر ایگزامپل فار اس. سو اف دیر از ڈفرنس یو کین ٹیک اٹ ان دا سینس آف ڈائیورسٹی. آل دو ڈفرنسز آر رائٹ. آئی تھنک دیٹ in their words it was tawasso. Tawasso means diversity. So Muhaddiseen, the stand of Muhaddiseen was that there are two parts of salat. One is the basic parts, basic structure. There are two parts of ibadah or salat. One is its basic structures and the second is its details, its minor details. So as far as the basic structure is concerned, it is one and the same. Everyone must perform Salatul Fajr in two units and Salatul Zuhr in four units and Salatul Asr in four units and Salatul Maghrib three units and Salatul Isha four units. So as far as the basic structure is concerned, there is unity, there is uniformity. But as far as the major details are concerned, there is no uniformity. Uniformity in major details is impossible, because namaz is not a routine, is not a set of rituals, is not simply a form. It is a matter of spirit. It is a living ibadah. Namaz is a living worship. So living worship cannot afford this kind of routine. You know, there are two different issues in fiqh: taqleed and ijtihad. Well-known issues, both are well-known issues of fiqh, taqleed and ijtihad. So what is taqleed and what is ijtihad? Taqleed means imitation. Taqleed means imitation. And ijtihad means independent thinking. So taqleed, people generally have taken taqleed as a eternal principle of Islam. Now taqleed means that according to their thinking, there were four mujtahid mutlaq, four scholars, yani Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Shafi, Imam Hanbal, Imam Malik. These four are regarded as mujtahid mutlaq, and these four imam established four schools of fiqh. These four imams have established four schools of fiqh, that is fiqh Hanafi, fiqh Shafi, fiqh Maliki, fiqh Hanbali. So these four imams have established four schools of fiqh. So present concept of taqleed means that we have to follow these imam and these fiqhi school. We cannot go beyond these fiqhi school. It is not lawful in Islam to follow any other pattern. So this is taqleed. I think that this kind of taqleed is not just according to the Islam. Islam is against this kind of taqleed. Taqleed means imitation. Now you know these four imam have find the place of, in practical sense, place of the Prophet. People imitate blindly. So this kind of imitation, this kind of taqleed, is quite against the spirit of Islam. Now I would like to say that there are two kinds of taqleed. One is to believe that these four imams were mujtahid, mustalaq, and those four schools are eternal schools, they are eternally correct, and we have no option other than to follow these schools. In this sense, taqleed is not just according to the Islamic spirit. It stops the intellectual development of Islam. This kind of taqleed creates stagnation, intellectual stagnation. This kind of taqleed, that four imam were mujtahid mutlaq, and now we have no option other than to follow these four school of fiqh. You know, these school of fiqh were established during the Abbasid Khilafat. So this kind of taqleed leads to intellectual stagnation. It is a permanent hindrance towards the intellectual progress, intellectual development in Islam. Now I believe that this kind of taqleed is not according to the Islamic spirit, but there is another form of taqleed, that is a practical need, practical requirement, and that is, in every society there are two categories of people: masses and educated people, and those who are not educated, or scholars or non-scholars. This kind of categorization is found in every society. So those who are scholars, those who have direct access to the Islamic sources, they can understand everything. Those scholars who have direct access to the Islamic resources, to the Quran, to Hadith, all those scriptures, so they directly can understand everything. But those who have no direct access, those who have no knowledge of Arabic language, those who cannot understand the scriptures, so what is their, what they have to do? So I think that these people who have no direct access to the Islamic sources, they must rely on some scholar of their contemporary, from their contemporary people. Every time there are some scholars in every age, every time, every place. So those who have no direct access to the Quranic sources, those who have not in a position to form right opinion about the Islamic teachings, so they must rely on any one of those scholars. They adopt them as their counselor, as their intellectual leader. So it is a temporary phenomenon. When one scholar dies, you have to adopt some other scholar. But that kind of taqleed means that those four imam, although they have died, but still they are our imam, still they are our leader, still we have to follow their pattern. This is stagnation. This is stagnation, intellectual stagnation. So I can say that in that sense, taqleed is not good. Because in that sense, they have opted taqleed as a belief, matter of belief. So I don't think that taking taqleed as a matter of belief is correct. No. But there is another aspect that is practical aspect. Those people who have no great knowledge, who have no direct access to the Islamic scriptures, so it is their problem how to follow Islam. So here taqleed is a practical requirement. They must rely to some scholar of their time. They have adopt some contemporary scholar, not permanently. So when this scholar dies, they must adopt another scholar. So this is a process of generation after generation. In every generation, there are some new people, there are some new scholars. So this kind of taqleed is a practical need of the religion of Islam. So I can say that taqleed in a permanent sense is not acceptable for me. But taqleed in a temporary sense is quite acceptable. It is need. It is our requirement. Then what is ijtihad? Literally, ijtihad means to strive. You know, Islam is an eternal ideology, but situation varies. Situation depends upon civilizational journey. Civilization is always in journey. Civilization is always in travel. So there is always changes in the situation. So although Islam is an eternal religion, but every time there is a question, every time there is a question, how to adjust with the changing conditions, how to accommodate with the changing conditions. So here we need ijtihad. Ijtihad means at one side you have full knowledge of Islamic teachings. On one side it means that you have good knowledge in Arabic language, you have good knowledge of Quran and Hadith, then you consider the given situation, then you find ways to reapply those eternal principles in your present situation. So ijtihad means to find ways of reapplication, to find ways of reapplication of Islam in your situation. In this sense, ijtihad is very important, very, very important. You know, in the book, Sahih al-Bukhari is a very authentic book of hadith. In Sahih al-Bukhari, there is a hadith. The Prophet of Islam has said that al-mujtahidu yukhti'u wa yusib. In this saying, the Prophet of Islam has said that when you try to go to ijtihad, in this hadith, Prophet of Islam says that always try to go to ijtihad, and every time in every place. So according to this hadith, ijtihad is a permanent process, eternal process. So Prophet of Islam has said that if your ijtihad is right, you will be rewarded, double reward. And if your ijtihad is wrong, you will be rewarded one reward. So according to the hadith, here Prophet of Islam has encouraged to continue the process of ijtihad, even by taking risk. If there is risk that you may be wrong in your ijtihad, you will commit some mistakes, even then you have to try to ijtihad, because without ijtihad we fell into stagnation. As situations vary, as conditions varies, so it is Islam, it is a need of Islam to reapply all those eternal principles in every given situations. If we stop ijtihad, then it's not good for Islam. It will create stagnation. It will create incompatibility between Islam and the present situation. So it is not correct. So ijtihad is very important. Ijtihad is a permanent process. Ijtihad is a non-stop process of Muslim Ummah. Ijtihad doesn't mean to invent a new religion. Ijtihad doesn't mean to revise the Islamic tenets. No. Ijtihad means seeking reapplication. Ijtihad means seeking reapplication. Seeking reapplication of a permanent threats of Islam to the changing situation. So this is ijtihad. And according to hadith, we can take risk if there is possibility that we may commit a mistake, but we are not allowed to stop the process. Process of ijtihad is an eternal requirement of Islam. اقول قولی هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم اجمعين.